All right, so we've been talking about the Sermon on the Mount. For those of you who weren't with us last week, we did a whole talk on the Bible, where it comes from, what it is, why we teach from it, why we believe it, and kind of questions like that. A lot of you guys had a ton of questions following that, and so if you've got questions, don't just kind of ask them to yourself and let them go. We're hoping that your small group is an awesome place for you to ask these questions. If it's a more personal question, take your leader aside after and say, "Can I talk to you privately? I'd like to. I have more questions." Okay, so or it doesn't necessarily have to be about the Bible. It can be about whatever. But that's one of the reasons our leaders are here. They're here for you guys. Okay. We talked about how the Bible outlasts its critics. That from what was the first example was from like 170 BC. When one of the Greek kings tried to destroy all the copies of the Torah, which was considered at that time God's word, right through to the present, where we have communist countries. Well, China is opened up a little bit, but just a few years ago, you weren't allowed to have a Bible; it was actually illegal, and so it isn't anymore. Thankfully, but there's always been people who want to get rid of the Bible. And one of the things we learned last week is how it's put together, 40 different authors, over a span of 1,500 years, and how it all just kind of works together and talks about the same thing is like impossible. If you imagine 40 different writers over that period of time throwing in their collective works, it would be like a mess. And so we talked about how God was behind the whole thing. That's why it was kind of one package. That's why it all works. That's why it's all one book, and it's God's book. And if we ask the question, if God was to write something to us, if he was to write us a book to tell us about himself, what would he write? Well, he did. He did. This is his book. He used human authors to write his book. And so we have right here God giving us who he is, showing us who he is in the Bible. All right, so that's kind of the sum up of last week's talk. And I want to start... where we left off, and just actually backing up a little bit. In Matthew chapter 5, if you have a Bible, you can go to Matthew chapter 5. We also, one of the things, just a reminder, the Bible has books, 66 books, and each of the books have chapters, and each of the books have verses. So when we refer to a book like Matthew, it's a book in the Bible, and then we refer to which chapter it is, and what verse we're going to read from. That's like an address. Like your house address, so you can find your house. The chapter and verse and book is like an address so we can find out where it is in the Bible. Okay? All right. So Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, verse 20, he finished off kind of one part of his sermon and started the next. But I want to back up a little bit. We read it last week, but I want to read it again. And he said, "Unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees, you will not see the kingdom of heaven." And what that means, actually, ask a question. Who can tell me what a Pharisee was? That's the first question. Religious leaders responsible for killing Jesus. That's pretty good. So what were they known for? Anybody? What's that? Piety. What's piety? Like self-righteousness, kind of. All right. What was that in the back? Okay. Jesus called them hypocrites. They were religious. Yeah. Anything else come to mind when we talk about a Pharisee? They were Jewish. Yeah. They were religious leaders at the time. Jews. Anything else? They hated Jesus, right? That's one of the big things. The Pharisees hated Jesus. The reason I want to talk about that is there would have been some Pharisees listening to this sermon. And when Jesus said, "Unless your righteousness or the way you live is better than the way the Pharisees live," who were like considered by the people to be, there's nobody that lives better than a Pharisee. He keeps all the rules, does everything he's supposed to, fasts from food when he's supposed to, does all these things. And Jesus says, "Unless your righteousness surpasses that, heaven isn't an option for you." And I'm just like thinking back to these people, and they would have been shocked, because the people listening would have been looking at Jesus and said, well, there is nobody more righteous than the Pharisees. So basically, Jesus is putting everybody in one boat and saying, there is nobody righteous enough to enter the kingdom of heaven. Is that a downer? Yeah? Totally, it seems. It would have maybe seemed to them a little bit. I'm sure some of the people were probably giggling, laughing, because the Pharisees were so proud and actually oppressed the people with their religious rules. But it would have been really hard to understand, what is Jesus talking about? How could I be a better person than the Pharisees, who were the best people that people could think of? They kept all the rules. They did everything by the book. So it's interesting. The reason that we backed up before we start reading in the text we're gonna talk about today is because, I want you guys to understand something. When Jesus was preaching this sermon, he was preaching something that was radical. The people listening would have been like, what? We've never heard this before. In fact, at the end of the sermon, it actually says that. They've never heard someone teach like this before. It was amazing. And here's kind of the message that's going to follow for the next, I don't know how many chapters and how many months that we're actually going to go through it. But this is it. This is it in a nutshell. Jesus is saying, it's time you guys lost your religion. Religion doesn't cut it. Religion is not what I want for you. Now, some of you guys may be going, aren't you religious? You're a pastor, you're in a church. And I want to let you guys know right now, I don't like religion. I don't want to be seen as a religious person, because I'm not, and I try not to be. And I'm going to explain that in a second. I don't want to be a religious person for the main reason of this. The religious people of the Bible were the ones who were responsible for killing Jesus. Okay? I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be a religious person. So maybe you have this question. Well, this is kind of weird. We're in a Christian church, and you're talking about we should be losing our religion, like REM. Interesting. Well, this is actually the message that Jesus has given the people. That it's time to quit trying to follow religion. And Jesus is introducing something amazing. He's like, instead of religion, instead of a bunch of rules that you have to follow in order to get to heaven or get to the afterlife, instead of having to try to prove yourself to other people and prove yourself to God, I got something that's way better. Do you guys know what that is? Anybody? What could be possibly better than, well, a lot of things. That was really phrased badly. I was going to say, what could be possibly better than religion? I'm like, pretty much everything. Jesus, right? Jesus himself. What Jesus is offering us here is to let go of our religion, to let go of trying to accomplish everything ourselves, being proud of ourselves for obeying all the rules, simply trying to be a good person. He's saying, let go of that. Because I want you to have a relationship with me. This is awesome. If you guys don't understand the meaning of this, I hope over the next few months you will. Because you will have a chance to let go of your thoughts about getting into a religion. Especially for those of you who are just checking us out. You can, you can totally leave the ideas of looking for a religion at the door, because that's not what you're going to find here. I certainly hope you don't find that here. What I hope you find is a relationship with Jesus. And for those of you who've grown up in the church, this is very difficult, because, and I'll give you a little bit of my experience growing up in a second, actually. Here's one of the things I see in pretty much every kid that's grown up in the church. They can't get past the fact that Christianity seems to be like a bunch of rules that we have to follow. And for those of you who didn't grow up in the church, you might think that way too. This is not just an exclusive club for church kids. Right? There's lots of people that think that way. But especially church kids who've grown up in it. They've heard sermon after sermon. They go to church every Sunday. They maybe went to Sunday school when they were kids. They go to youth group. And all they see in their life is that they follow a religion where there's a bunch of rules that they need to live up to. And I'm hoping over the next couple of months that you guys have grown up in the church, and you can leave that behind. Because that's not what Jesus calls us to. He calls us to something that's way, way better than that. That's awesome. He calls us into relationship with Him. Remember, like, for those of you who weren't here, you won't remember, but a few weeks back, we talked about holiness. We talked about how holy God was, and that when we sinned, that we were separated from God. That we actually, it's not that God was just pushing us away, it was actually we couldn't come into fellowship with God because it would kill us. Because God is so awesome that sin can't even go near God. So it's for our own protection that God has separated us from Him. And when Jesus came and died on the cross for us, He paid the penalty for our sin. He paid the price that we were supposed to pay, because the Bible says the wages of sin is death. So Jesus paid that penalty. And now He's given us an opportunity to have relationship with God again. Because He took your sin. He was perfect. Didn't sin. He lived a sinless life. Didn't sin. Died for your sin. He was perfect. And so now you can have relationship with God like nobody else in history except for maybe Adam. Adam and Eve. That is really, really awesome. And this is what we're going to be talking about. This opportunity to find a relationship with a real person named Jesus. And when you come into relationship with Jesus, everything in your life is going to change. Because you know what happens when you start getting into a relationship with Jesus? When you start to fall in love with Jesus? Your whole life gets turned upside down. He gives you new desires in your heart. He changes the way you want to treat other people. He does some incredible things in you. And for those of you who are like hurting and broken, He wants to invade your life. He wants you to reach out for Him, because those hurts and that pain that you might be going through, He can help. He loves you. Wait, I need to really move on because I'm getting stuck on this one thing here. So I just want you guys to keep this in mind as we're going through this, that we're not talking about religion. That you leave your religion at the door. We're not talking about religion. I don't want to be religious. Religious people kill Jesus. I want to be a follower of Jesus. I want to try my best to become like Jesus. But more than that, I want to let Jesus live through me. And you may not understand at all what that means. But hopefully in the next few months, you'll start to begin to understand that. As we get to know what it means to become an apprentice of Jesus. You guys remember talking about apprentices? Yeah? Well, this is what it's about. It's about friendship with Jesus. It's about apprenticing under Him, because He's the master of life, right? He knows life. He created it. And He knows what we need to live it and to live it to the full. Okay? He's the master of life. That's His trade, life. And He wants us to apprentice under Him. And in that apprenticeship, He wants us to have a relationship with Him. Okay, I just got a quick kind of little illustration. I told you I was going to tell you my story, but maybe next week, because we need to really move on here. This is the transition that I want you guys to go through. How many of you guys like sports? Yeah? Cool. How many of you guys like basketball? Yeah? Yeah. You're not LeBron at all. You're the bum. Alright. Okay. When you first start playing a game like basketball, and I started playing basketball when I was in grade 10. Okay, I'd never played it before. I played it in gym class a couple times. I didn't understand it at all. Okay, I didn't know the rules. I knew you're supposed to bounce the ball and you couldn't grab it and run. I knew that much. And I knew you're supposed to get the ball in the hoop. But other than that, I didn't really know a lot of the rules. So here's what happened when I started playing basketball. I was really conscious of all the rules. There was like, couldn't travel with the ball, you couldn't like carry it. You couldn't like punch guys in the head when they went to shoot. I mean, come on. You couldn't double dribble. I mean, you may not know what those things are, but they're against the rules in basketball. Okay, so it's like when you first come to know Jesus, or if you've grown up in the church, one of the things that the church can look like, or that Christianity can look like, is simply a bunch of rules. And it's like the first time you picked up a basketball and you look at all these rules and you're like, what in the world? I just want to bounce the ball and have fun. Well, as you get better at basketball, okay? Over time, I played high school basketball, and then I went on to play college basketball at Mount Royal College in Calgary. And over time, I got better and better at basketball until, you know, as I look back now, there was a moment that I can't pinpoint right now, but as I look back, I realized that I no longer played the game thinking about the rules. Because the basketball ceased to become all the rules that I had to follow, and suddenly became this game that I didn't even have to think about the rules. Because as I got better and better at basketball, I wasn't worried about whether I was going to double dribble. I wasn't worried about whether I was stepping out of bounds. I wasn't worried about if I was traveling with the ball. I knew it was already in me. It was like in my mind and in my heart, everywhere. It was in my being. I already knew. I didn't even think about it anymore. I just wanted to play the game. And so suddenly the rules didn't matter anymore. I still played by the rules. And I got a new understanding that, hey, you know what? I'm really glad there's some rules here, because this game would be mayhem if there wasn't any rules. Can you imagine basketball without any rules? That'd be horrible. People would like be stabbing you, and you go up for a shot and they like punch you in the kidney. You know, that would suck. Or like, they go for a layup, clothesline. You know, that would be brutal, right? But you look at a guy like LeBron James. I guarantee you that this guy does not think about the rules. He goes out to play the game. So what I'm asking you guys tonight to do, if you're a Christian, I want you to start thinking about your faith differently. I want you to start thinking about it as a relationship. That right now, you might be like, man, there's a lot of rules. There's a lot of things that I think I should, or I'm supposed to be doing. This is how I'm supposed to be. Man, it's tough. I want you guys to think that it's like you're starting out in playing basketball. You're just learning the rules. But as you progress, as these things start taking root in your heart, as you start becoming a different person, as Jesus starts changing you from the inside out, you're going to forget about the rules. You're going to leave them behind, because all of a sudden you start realizing, wow, this isn't about the rules at all. It's about the game. There's something way better than just following all these rules to see if I'm good enough, if I measure up. Because it's not what it's about. And Jesus is saying it right here. It's not about following the rules and doing the right stuff. It's actually about following Jesus and having a relationship with Him. All right, we got a motor here. Okay. This is what Jesus continues, and He's on the Sermon on the Mount. You're familiar with the command to the ancients. This is one of the Ten Commandments. Do not murder. I'm telling you that anyone who is so much as angry with a brother or sister is guilty of murder. You guys catch that? You guys catch that over there? Is that not nuts? Let me read it again, because I don't think you guys caught it. You're familiar with the command to the ancients, do not murder. I'm telling you that anyone who is so much as angry with a brother or sister is guilty of murder. Carelessly call a brother an idiot, and you just might find yourself hauled into court. Talking about slander here. If you slander somebody, it's actually an offense. Or slander written? Who cares? You can actually go to court for that. Or thoughtlessly yell stupid at a sister, and you're on the brink of hellfire. The simple moral fact is that words kill. This is how I want you to conduct yourself in these manners. If you enter a place of worship and, about to make an offering, you suddenly remember you have a grudge a friend has against you, abandon your offering. leave immediately. Go to this friend and make things right. Then and only then, come back and work out things with God. Or say you're on the street, and an old enemy attacks you, or accosts you, it says. It kind of attacks you. Don't lose a minute. Make the first move. Make things right with him. After all, if you leave the first move to him, knowing his track record, you're likely to end up in court, or maybe even jail, or maybe just beat up. If that happens, you won't get out without a stiff fine. Okay, let's kind of figure out what he's saying here. I think we can boil it down to a couple things. The first part, did you notice that he said, I'm telling you that anyone who is so much as angry with a brother or sister is guilty of murder. Is that not a strong statement? Okay, you guys got to think about this for a second. In light of what we just talked about, relationship versus religion, that Jesus just said that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees, you will not see the kingdom of heaven. The Pharisees believe that by simply following the written rules of do not murder, that they were righteous. And Jesus is going, uh-uh. That's not what God's intent was from the beginning. Because if you hate your brother in your heart, you're committing murder in your heart. And so he was exposing that these religious leaders, although they thought they were righteous, he was exposing them and saying, see, your religion is, well, crap. It's not going to do anything for you, because what I want you to do is I don't want you to hate people, and more than that, I want you to love people. You guys kind of catch what Jesus is doing here? He's confronting this idea that you have to follow the rules, and that's what righteousness is, and he's saying, no. What I really want you to do, I want you to start seeing people the way I see people. I want you to start loving and trying to love people, even when it's really tough. Even when an enemy comes up and, you know, like it says, attacks you. Try to make things right with them. If you have something against a friend, or a friend's got something against you, go to them right away. Fix it. If it's something you've done to them, apologize. They may not forgive you. But you need to do your part. And the anger he's talking about, I'm telling you that anyone who is as much as angry with a brother or sister is guilty of murder. Now, the Bible isn't saying that the emotion of anger is wrong. Okay? Because that would be crazy, right? Because as an emotion, you feel anger. You can't control what you feel, right? When you're angry, you feel angry. Jesus wasn't saying that that is sin. In fact, the Bible says in the book of Ephesians that in your anger, do not sin, right? So we know that there's possibility of being angry without sinning. We also know that Jesus was angry and didn't sin, okay? There was people in the temple actually ripping people off, selling stuff at huge prices, and Jesus, he was angry, and he threw their tables over, and the money changers all scattered and ran away, and like he was really upset. So anger as an emotion is not necessarily a sin. What happens? Well, actually, I'll let you guys try to answer this one. What kind of anger is sin? That's an emotion. Okay, when anger turns to hate, yeah. So how does anger turn to hate? What happens? What are you doing with anger? What's that? Keeping it in. What does that mean? You're holding on to it, right? You're not letting it go. All you're consumed by, let's say this person did something to you and you're just angry and you're consumed by it. And in the end, you respond according to anger, or you're motivated. Your response is motivated by anger. That's what Jesus is talking about. He's like, that kind of stuff, he says, that's murder. You're actually committing murder in your heart. Okay, so this is some serious stuff. You guys want to know why? When you have like some huge fights with friends or stuff's going on, why it just explodes is because this stuff is super destructive. When you hold on to anger, it becomes incredibly destructive, not just to the person that you're lashing out at, but to yourself. anger destroys you from the inside out. And you'll notice that when you deal with stuff in anger, it doesn't get better, right? Well, I think the best example of this anger is like road rage. Like it has nowhere to go, right? You're like screaming at the guy and he's got his radio on. He's like, he can't hear you. But this anger is just eating you up. It's destroying you. And Jesus is saying you can respond differently. That you can actually let go of anger. And I really hope you have enough time to kind of do the how-to here. Wait, we need to move on here. When we hold on to anger, it becomes something, we already said there's hatred. There's another thing that anger can become. And this one is super damaging. This is the cruelest form of hatred. It's called contempt. You guys know what contempt is? Anybody? Anyone want to give it a shot? What's contempt? Because you can picture it, right? If you think of somebody who's like full of contempt for you, it's not a good picture, right? They're looking down at you. They think you're like lower than them. They're like, a lot of bullies are filled with contempt. They put people down to make themselves feel better. Okay, that's a form of contempt. And that's one of the cruelest forms of hatred. This is because you've bottled up anger, you've held on to it. It grows, it becomes something like contempt. And that's totally where bullying, that's where name calling, where this kind of form of hatred comes from. It comes from this anger. And you know where the anger comes from? You know, what happens when you get angry? What's going on? Okay, that's okay, you could scream. But like everybody, this happens to everyone. Why is the reason you get angry? You get wronged. How about this? One of your goals gets blocked. Or your will, what you desire, gets blocked. Think about this. Pretty much I can't actually think of a situation of me or anyone else getting angry when it wasn't something that they wanted got blocked. Okay? So if you want someone to think of you this way, someone gossips about you and people start thinking another way of you, that's like your goal was for people to look at you like this. Now they're looking at you this. You're angry. And you want to destroy that person and you want to make everybody think of you like this. Of course, anger is going to do the opposite for you, by the way. Okay? Anger is the result of a sin called pride. You guys know that? If you're an angry person, more than likely, the root of that anger is pride. It's self-righteousness. You might be going like, what? Yeah. Because when your will gets blocked, your pride is at stake. When somebody talks something bad about you, your pride is at stake. And so if you've got a pretty good ego, more than likely you got some anger issues. Anger can also be the result of some hidden sin in your life. I was going to say countless times, but not countless. Lots of times. I've been talking to mostly young guys and dealing with anger issues. And at some point in the conversation, I have to ask them about lust and porn. And guaranteed, not guaranteed, but almost every time a guy who's struggling with anger is also into stuff like porn. And you're like, what? And you're like, yeah, because most guys who are into porn are not into it and letting the whole world know, you know? They're taking their laptop down the mall and going like, see, look what I'm looking at. You know, that doesn't happen. It's a secret, right? It's secret sin. It's hidden. Very funny. I don't know who said that. I'm not repeating it, though. Okay, so here's the deal. Anger turns into contempt. Okay, and then there's another whole level of contempt, which is even worse. Okay, this is when you go beyond just the name-calling where you really want to injure somebody. So it could be racial slurs. Okay? So you talk about somebody's race in order to hurt them. Or you may just actually think you're better. Again, ego problem. It might be that you call somebody something like a slut. Okay? That is like, that's killer. You call somebody a slut, that is like one of the highest forms of contempt. You're looking down at them, and you're like putting yourself above them. I'm better than you. And you're calling them something that's horrible and degrading. You're calling them something that's worthless. And Jesus thinks of you differently. The reason why we don't call people things like sluts is because Jesus would never call you that. Jesus sees you completely differently. And he wants us, the people who are following him, he wants you guys to start seeing people the way he sees people. That's why we don't use racial slurs. That's why, you know, I don't think racial jokes are funny at all. I think they're stupid, and I think they're incredibly hurtful and hateful. And I don't even care if they're like, well, there's, if it's a Chinese joke or something, well, there's no Chinese people here. It's just like, that's horrible. Racial jokes are not funny. They're hurtful. They're degrading. They're horrible. They're meant to put you up on a pedestal and so you can look down at everyone else in contempt. Yeah, probably. You may get a black eye, right? All right, let's finish this up here. Here's the deal, guys. You guys, here's my own kind of Jesus saying in the Sermon on the Mount. You've heard it said, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. But I say that words, especially words that come out of contempt, it's like a knife in your soul. It destroys you from the inside out. What's that? Words are in dictionaries, you betcha. If you get hit with a dictionary, it probably hurt. That's a good one. Can you guys see what's going on here? Jesus said, you see how this is murder? You're actually killing someone's soul. You're destroying them. You're trying to like stab them with a knife in the soul. That's what hatred is. That's what contempt is. That's what holding on to your anger and responding to somebody with it. That's what it does. That's why Jesus is saying it's like murder, guys. So you think that you're a good person? Guess what? I can bet you every single one of us here is a murderer. Every single one of us is a murderer. And you guys are going to read a verse in your small group about that, so I won't go any further with that. But guys, it's only when we start getting rid of stuff like hatred and anger and contempt that we can even start the process of this relationship with Jesus. Because Jesus is not about contempt. He's the opposite of contempt, hatred, and anger that's harbored and held onto. He never lashed out at people. In fact, Jesus was hanging on a cross, and we're going to talk about this in a few weeks, the most horrible death possible at the time. It was just, it's awful. And instead of lashing out at the people and, you know, being angry and hateful, you know what Jesus said? He said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they do. They were hurting him in a way that you could never be hurt, like could never be equaled. Like they destroyed his body. They did everything possible to destroy Jesus inside and out. With words, with whips, with nails and spikes through his hands, and ultimately with torture. And this is what Jesus said before he died. Forgive them. Forgive them, Father. They don't know what they're doing. This is the picture. This is the relationship. This is the person that we can be in relationship with. Is this not ultimately the most awesome person ever? I mean, who does that? Well, Jesus did it. In fact, and we have record of his followers doing the same thing, reacting the same way. Okay, we really need to go to small group. We're gonna do the 30-hour famine after small group. I'm just gonna set up We're going to set up a table out here, and you guys can kind of come and sign up after your small group is done. But just before you leave, I want you to hear really quickly. Okay, I struggle with anger and contempt, and like the worst form of contempt. I've called people sluts. I have made racial slurs. I have called people names. I've been a bully. I've hated people. I'm guilty of murder. Okay? All of us are. Because all of us we're all in the same boat. Every single one of us is guilty of murder. Because we've all had these things. We've all been angry in a way that wasn't appropriate with somebody. And I can pretty much say all of us have used contempt at one time in our life, at least, on another person. So how do we get out of that? How do we get rid of our anger? Well, this is, I'm going to read to you from 1 Corinthians chapter 9. We talked about, remember the basketball illustration? Well, Paul, the Apostle Paul, who wrote this book of 1 Corinthians, this is what he says. He says, everyone who competes in the games, he's talking about the Olympic Games. This is like 2,000 years ago, which is pretty cool. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that won't last. But we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I do not run like a man running aimlessly. I do not fight like a man beating the air. No, I beat my body. I make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. Basically, what Paul is saying right here is that the Christian life, becoming like Jesus, is like an athlete in training. Is that sometimes the training is tough. Sometimes it's hard work. But I want you guys to start thinking that the Christian life is about training in righteousness or living like Jesus. So you guys, what's going on over here? What's that? All right, we're going to go to small groups in a second. So if you guys want to get rid of, if you guys want to get rid of anger and hatred and stuff out of your life, it starts first with getting rid of the pride. Saying, oh, okay, you know what? I recognize that the reason that I'm angry and hateful toward people is because of me. It's my pride. It's not even what they've done to me. Because look what they did to Jesus, and Jesus didn't have that. It's because of you. It's because what's inside of you. And so you need to start, and if you really want to deal with anger, you need to start with Jesus. You need to start with giving Him the anger. You need to find ways that you can release that anger in ways that is healthy. And like maybe doing something good for somebody. And it's doable. It's actually like becoming, and it's the start, it's tough, and you're going to fail a lot. But the idea is to be eventually, over time, like a person training for a running event. Over time, they get stronger and stronger and stronger. And they can run faster and faster and faster. That's the idea in the Christian life. That's the idea of apprenticing. We're becoming the type of people that slowly over time, that don't get angry, that don't hate people. I shouldn't say that don't get angry, but don't hold on to their anger and respond with anger. That don't show contempt for people. It's a process. It's training. All right. I don't know if I did that justice, but we really need to go to small groups. I think there's some good questions in for our small groups. So you guys can head off.